Ladies and gentlemen, Dallas Snyder.
Good evening. So many times you have heard me talk about my Aunt Catherine. Aunt Catherine, last month in August, turned 95 years old. Aunt Catherine, at the present moment, is trying to make her transition. And I talked to her last week, but I talked to her son this morning. And I am going to leave and be in Pennsylvania by Wednesday because Aunt Catherine. Would like me to be there. So I shall go to see her and help her during this period. And I feel very honored and very blessed to be able to do this. I don't know if you, many of you people have been around when somebody is making their transition. It's a wonderful experience for both people to understand what's going on and to stay in reality. It's just an honor to be able to help somebody and to be able to hold them while they're making this transition. So she would like me there, so I'm going to go. Do that, and then they also ask me if she makes her transition while she's home, which I'm sure she will, because I'm sure she's waiting for me to get there. Then I will return October the 7th. I had originally planned on going home from the 28th of this month to the to October 7th, but today I was able to change my airline reservation, so I will be in Pennsylvania on Wednesday. So, I think we talked once before about this whole thing of somebody making their transition. For people who don't know what that means that Aunt Catherine is going to do what the world calls die. She's no longer going to be in her physical body. She's going to leave that behind. Her physical body has served her for 95 years, and very well. Aunt Catherine, in her lifetime, has not been ill. So, here at the end, when she is ready to give up her body is starting to fail her. So, with that, we will miss her, and I will miss her. But we have to know, if we're in this teaching, or in any religious teaching whatsoever, the whole idea that they're teaching is eternal life. So when these things come to us, we have to remember that and not go in to a pit of despair and not throw out what we have learned. Because I realize that Aunt Catherine will be completely involved in a whole new and different life, on a different plane of action. So you have to remember that. And so many people go to their churches and their temples every week, and they profess all these things. But then when it's coming close and when it happens, we throw that out. And this is the time we must rely on what we are teaching. So we know that there is such a thing as eternal life. If you went to high school and took a basic science class, you were taught that matter can neither be created nor destroyed. And what Aunt Catherine is some part of matter, and she's some part of mind. So therefore, she will always exist, and she will continue to exist just in a whole new and different way. But you'll be completely occupied in something new and different. Because this is an adventure, this thing called life. It's an adventure. And right now, in this adventure of life, we are on this plane of action. And we have taken human form. We have taken human form so that we can learn something about ourselves. So that we can learn to love ourselves. And love ourselves unconditionally. You have read many times that we are made just a little lower than the angels. And this is absolutely true. And then you also know that we are always connected to this thing called God. And if we know that God is a living God, therefore we must be living also. God cannot be seen. God is completely invisible. God is energy. God is intelligence. And Catherine will become invisible, but her consciousness will still be there. And what she learned here, she will take with her on her journey throughout life, because life goes on. Practitioner work, there is no end. So we must know that for ourselves and for our loved ones. And yes, we will miss, or I will miss Aunt Catherine. But thank goodness I will miss her. What if she lived and I didn't miss her? That would be the tragedy. So I've learned many wonderful things from Aunt Catherine. And remember, Aunt Catherine is the one who said, when I asked her, I said, Aunt Catherine, how do you stay in such good humor all the time? And she said, Dallas, I control my thinking. I control my thinking. This is a woman who doesn't know what metaphysics even is, but she was able to figure out that it is her thinking that is causing her life, because we live in a mental world. So here, from a 95-year-old person, you know that she has lived well. She had a marvelous life. So we honor that life, we celebrate that life, and we allow her to go. And that is why I'm going home, so that she realizes that she has the permission to leave, that she doesn't have to stay here any longer, that she may leave. So if anyone has any questions about that, I'm more than willing to talk about that. But this whole thing of death in our society, we are so afraid of death. And I have no idea why. I have never been afraid of death. I knew from a very early age that who I am and what I am and the consciousness I have will continue throughout eternity. So I do not have that problem. And if any of you have that problem and think that your life ends because you leave this plane of action, it does not end when you leave this plane of action. You continue, and you continue on a journey and on an adventure. And if you look at your life now, at this point in this stage, here on this plane of action, and look at it as an adventure, you'll have much more fun. You'll have much more fun if you see this whole thing as an adventure. Many people want to escape this plane of action. They want to escape this experience because they think it's drudgery, because they think it's stress, struggle, strain, and sacrifice all the time. That is a mindset that they have. And if you have that mindset, allow it to go. Give yourself permission to think of yourself in a different and new light. And one of the ways to do that is to remember that you will always be alive. You will always be living. So you will just change. Just like a caterpillar becomes a butterfly, Aunt Catherine will leave her body here, but she will continue on her journey. And the only thing that's keeping her now is that body, and that she's waiting for permission to be able to do that. Yes?
So when we grieve, are we grieving the loss of status in our relationship with that person, or are we grieving the illusion of separation because they're in a different plane or state of being?
We're really doing both. Because if you realize now that when somebody makes their transition, now they're always with you, and they're always present. Wherever you are, they are present. So the grieving part of it, and that idea that you're separated from it, that's an ego mind. You see, you have to realize that nothing is lost in the mind of God. God knows where everything is. So it's not a loss, you know. I had an English teacher way back in college, and she said, She ran into somebody in the market, and they said, you know, we lost mother. And she said, I couldn't think, you know, where, how could you lose mother, you know? Because we think we've lost something. When somebody makes their transition, we think we have lost something. That is what the world's teaching. That is in race mind. Never think that, you see. I would get rid of, if I were a newspaper, I would get rid of the obituaries and put down celebrations of life. And these are celebrations. These people have graduated. They're moving on to a different life. But there's no such thing. We buy into that all the time. We think we're losing something. Don't ever think that you're losing something. It's an impossibility to lose something. What is yours by right of consciousness always remains yours. What I know about Aunt Catherine, what I have learned from Aunt Catherine, will always be with me. I will not lose any of that. The only thing that we are losing is a body. And we know that we are not our bodies. And this thing that we call nature, this thing that we call God, when we think of God as a merciful God, it's certainly very merciful to have made a human being that when their body starts to fail, when the body no longer gives pleasure, that we have a way to release ourselves from that. And the way is called death. Or transition, and we transition into a new life. Does that help you?
Almost. The thing that we miss then is what? The communion with that body, or?
You don't really, when you say you're missing something or losing something, that's an illusion that your mind is throwing in front of you. You have lost nothing. You see. Nothing can be lost in this universe, by the way. It always remains the same. If you weighed anything, it always stays the same.
In a way, it's hard to really accept this, but there's a smarter part of me that knows that rather than lose, it almost makes you closer because they are released and there's not that boundary of skin and body, but the spirit, it's like it becomes just part of you.
Yes.
And it's like it envelops you.
Yes.
But I say it, but it's really hard to let it just right. Be at peace with me. But I feel that.
And that's the idea. Let it be at peace with you. Think about it. Don't be afraid of the whole process. It's a process. Life is a process. Death is a process. But death, that process is another process of life. It's always life. They're just different processes that we're going through. We are the ones who put the labels on it. We are the ones that says, oh, isn't that awful? Oh, my goodness, this, that, and the other thing. Don't do that. Don't do that. Now, I'm not looking forward to my transition, but I am not afraid of my transition either, you see. There's no, you know, I look at it as a great adventure, you know, into that unknown. Because what do I know about that? I know that I'm always connected with God. And I realize that I will always go back to what they call the Godhead. That's the only place you're going to go. Some people think you're going to go to this thing called hell. There is no such thing as hell. There is no such thing as hell. If you believe in hell, you are causing separation. And we do not teach separation. This is a teaching of unity. So there is nothing. That helps anybody. But it will be sad, and I'll be sad. And yes, I will have my emotions, and I will feel those emotions. But I realize that life will go on, and her life will go on. You know, we always hear that. Oh, life will go on, meaning your life will go on. Her life will go on also. She just won't have the body. That's all. Just keeps going. All right, then. So we won't have class next Monday and maybe the next Monday. So I'll keep in touch and we'll talk what you put on the internet so that we'll find out.
So 2 weeks.
2 weeks at least. Yeah, 2 weeks. I was only ever going to go for 1 week, but the day they said, please come home and please plan on staying 2 weeks. You know. So, I will do that and I will honor that. So,
well, as you say, in your absence, we will hold you in the highest esteem.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Bingo.
It always helps you. All right, so with that, let's do a class. All right, what is the great news? What is a good thing that we always want to know about ourselves? What are some of the things that we should know about ourselves? Since August, when we were talking about the lost mode of prayer, now we should all know how to use that, and we should all know that everything is going to start inside of us, and it's going to come out from us, not from anybody else. So, we always want to know that we're worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that we matter. This is very, very important, and I understand from many people that they're hearing this on different motivational tapes, different things on television, the whole works. Other people are finally starting to admit this, that this is what you need to do. See, the failing of religion was the failing that they taught you that you could not be perfect, that you were nothing, and that you did not matter, you see. And that's been the failing of churches, because you matter very much. You have to matter. You have to matter to this thing called God. You cannot say to yourself, all I am is God, but I am not all that God is, and then let your mind tell you that you do not matter. You have to know that you absolutely matter, not only to yourselves, but to this thing that we call God. You see, God would be incomplete without each and every one of us. God needs us. God operates in, as, and through us. You see, and that's what we have to remember. So when you do your treatment work, when you do your affirmations or anything, first of all, sit down and love yourself and know that you matter. Know that you're worthy, deserving, and totally lovable. And your affirmations and your treatment work will work even faster for you. But it always is going to start with you. It's always going to start with you. If you remember, I used to say, and I still do on occasion, that the more you love yourself, the more you're going to have in your life. The more you love yourself, the more you're going to have in your life. Because this thing that we call the universe backs you up. It backs you up not only in what you're saying, but it backs you up in what you're feeling about yourself. And if you're feeling worthy about yourself, wonderful things are going to come into your life. And this is what we want to remember. So we always want to start anything and start your day and end your day with I'm worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and I matter. And do it as many times throughout the day as you want to. When I first started in this teaching over 30 years ago, I did affirmations all day long. I was a real estate agent at the time, and from traffic light to traffic light, driving through the city of Atlanta, Georgia, I would do an affirmation from one traffic light to the next traffic light. At that traffic light, I would change to the next one. And I did that till I imprinted all those things in my mind. The mental world we live in, and we are using our minds, and it's our thinking that is causing everything to happen to us. We are always the cause unto our own experience. And the things that we were thinking before we started these classes, we learned from the outside world, and we learned from other people, and we repeated them enough and believed them enough till they now, if they're not working, if your thoughts are not working for you, if your attitudes, beliefs, viewpoints, and opinions are not working for you and not bringing into your life what you want, you have to know that you can change those. You see, that's the most wonderful thing about this thing called life. You can change your life anytime you want by changing your thinking. Thinking is not static. You do not have to believe what your parents believe. You do not have to believe what I believe. You do not have to believe what churches believe. You can start to believe what you want to believe. What do we know about most religions? What do they teach? It is always done unto you as you believe. But then they tell you, you have to believe in what Jesus said. You have to believe in God. You have to believe in this. You have to believe in that. You have to believe in yourself. because it's always going to be done unto you as you believe. So start believing in yourself. Start knowing that you're worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. And it will change your life. With that, let's do the matter dance. I matter, I matter, I really, really matter. I matter, I matter, I really, really matter.
Yay.
Yes, always know that. And tell it to yourself. Don't wait for other people to do it for you. Do it for yourself. And then once you start to matter, people will notice. And they will say, geez, you really think you matter. And you can look them straight in the eye and say, thank you for noticing. Thank you for noticing. We want to be around people that matter. You see, we want to be around people that think that they're lovable. Who wants to be around people who don't think those thoughts, that they're not worthy and deserving? They're not nice people to be around. They're not. And you don't want that in your life. You don't want that seeping into your consciousness. We're always living in thought atmospheres. So learn to live in the correct thought atmosphere. Change your life completely. Okay? Let's look at the little handout. Let me explain this little handout to you. I found this in my storage room. This little handout was given to me at least 25 years ago. And you'll see a Tom Talbert down here from New Orleans. He sent me this. Tom Talbert has made his transition. So 25 years ago, before he was in New Orleans, he was in Atlanta, Georgia. Tom was my first client, we'll say, for practitioner work. When I was getting my practitioner's license, you had to be able to demonstrate that you were able to do this work, and you had to make three demonstrations. Tom's was the first person and the first demonstration I made. Tom was a high school principal in Georgia. He wanted to go to New Orleans. He had quit his job. He wanted a teaching job in New Orleans. So he came to me. And we did treatment work, and we did treatment work. He heard nothing from the different places that he put in New Orleans. So he came to me and he said, well, nothing's happening. And I said, well, you have to do something about that. There has to be some movement in mind going on. You have to be able to convince the universe that this is what you want. He said, how am I going to do that? I said, have you started to move? He said, what do you mean? I said, have you packed anything? He said, well, no, I'm not going to pack anything till I get the letter that I have a job in New Orleans. I said, you go home. You get boxes. You start packing those boxes and writing New Orleans on those boxes. He went home and did that, and in 2 days he called me and said, I got an offer for a job in New Orleans, Dallas, to be a third grade teacher they need. But he said, I don't want a teacher. I've been a principal, and I wanted the principal's job, and they're offering me this job. And I said, now listen, you wanted to go to New Orleans. I said, it's not the job you wanted, but you take that job. Because I want to tell you that this thing called God knows exactly what it's doing. And this is what it wants you to do at the present moment. So he went, took the job as a third grade. He was there 3 months. The principal quit, and they made him the principal of the school. This is how you do treatment work. And this is how you make your own demonstration. You have to do something always to impress the universe. Remember, the universe is like Play-Doh, and you're pushing up against it, and you make a mold in that. And then that universe fills that. It fills it. But it doesn't do it if you just sit there and do nothing. You have to you have to have a movement in mind, a movement in your mind, a movement in the mind of God. You have to show the universe that that is your intention, and that's exactly what you want. So as soon as he started to pack, And right on the box is New Orleans. The universe supplied what he wanted. Does this help anybody? So when you're doing treatment work, think, how can I impress the universe? How can I impress the universe and get what I want? And this is how you do it, you see. You have to do something. Remember, it's always treat or move your feet. In the outside world and in brand name religions, they say God helps those who help themselves. You have to start doing something. And then the universe comes in and picks that up. But it's impressing your mind and it's impressing the mind of God that this is what you want. But people will not do that. They think they can just sit there and do nothing. No, you must impress the universe, okay? And what do we always remember? It's already done. It's already done. And even though your demonstration at the moment doesn't look like you want, you must move in that direction. Because this thing called God always is going to work in strange ways. You say, always. You don't know what has to go on there. But the universe, God knows. So, Pack got the job, not the one he wanted, but he wound up with the job that he wanted. So anyway, that's Tom Talbert. Tom also was the first person who did Daily Word, and that's when I started to do Daily Word because of this young man. This little pamphlet that he sent me from New Orleans, as you can see, is from the Unity School of Christianity. Let's just do the one, and he underlined these or circled these things. So let's look at what he circled here. This is the God-given ability to reject what they do not want in life. You see, most people never reject what they don't want. They just keep taking what they don't want. But they'll complain constantly, I don't want that, I don't want that, I don't want that. Well, then stop accepting it, you see. Stop accepting it. Start asking for what you want. Start seeing yourself with what you want. Very easy. But we don't do that. Okay. We must become aware that limitations have no place in the mind of God. Well, absolutely. There's no limitation in the mind of God. That's what you want to know. This course, this little class called Prosperity and Abundance, Including Money, you have to know that money is everywhere. And there's no limit to the money that you can make for yourself or that you can have in your life. I just heard from somebody, since I never listen to those things, I get it piecemeal from other people, that Congress has just given trillions or up the budget trillions or the debt trillions that were in trillions of dollars into debt now, and they okayed that. But you see, there's no limitation to money. If we want to go trillions, billion, what's past the trillion? Well, then, you know. Well, then, we'll just keep doing that. We'll just keep doing that, you see. There's no limitation to money. No limitation to money. And money is never the issue. Money is never the issue. If you can't afford something and so forth, it's not because you don't have. That's not the issue. The issue is not the money. It's what you are thinking in your mind that is always going to be the issue. The issue being, I can't afford it. Remember, we never say you can't afford something. We say, I choose at the present moment not to purchase something. But you never tell your mind that you don't have the money, you see. Because you have to realize that money is always there. When you say, I don't have the money, you are living in two different worlds. You are living in scarcity and lack. And you cannot live in scarcity and lack and abundance at the same time. So you have to make up your mind, which one am I going to live in? Am I going to see the world as a scarce place where money is always hard to find and hard to get? Or am I going to live over here in abundance and prosperity where money is always freely circulating in my life? It's a choice. It has nothing to do with the facts. It has nothing to do with the illusion that you're looking at. It has to do with what you are thinking. What you're thinking. How many times have I said, Life is a choice. You can choose. If there is a garbage heap over here and flowers over there, you have a choice which one you want to look at. You're saying, which one do you want to look at? Remember, it's unity, people. It's always going to be unity. You cannot have separation. You cannot say there's abundance and scarcity. You see? No wonder people go berserk. So you have to know that it's always abundant universe, and it's always a prosperous universe, and that money is always freely circulating in my life, and you look in that direction. Regardless of the facts, you have to live in the truth. And the truth is that this is an abundant universe. The fact is, at the present moment, some people are struggling. That is merely a fact. So don't live in facts. Live in truth. And don't let your life at the present moment, if you're having difficulty with money circulation or your checkbook doesn't look quite right, know that that is only a fact. And as soon as you realize that that's a fact, and you start to look at the source, God is always going to be the source of all your supply. As soon as you start to remember that, things will come to you again. Because it's never going to be your job that's the source of your supply. It's always going to be God. God acting through your job. But then you also have to realize that God can open up many channels for money to come to you. So you start to look for those other channels. You start to see things coming to you. You always go to the mailbox knowing that there are going to be checks in the mail and not bills. Everyone I know on the way to the mailbox says, I hope there aren't bills in there. I go to the mailbox saying, if there is a bill in there, I am so delighted because I have the money to pay it. And I thank you, God, for that in advance. I know that I have the money to pay it, and I thank you, God, in advance. You have to know that. But if you keep saying, there's bills and how am I going to pay them, you're creating that reality for yourself. You're creating it. That's how powerful your mind is. You see. And yes, it's very convincing. Lack and limitation is very convincing. But if lack and limitation is very convincing, can't you get convinced about abundance and prosperity? You see, it's just merely, if that can convince me, why can't this convince me? You see? You have to be convinced. You can do it. And you can do this. That was that one. We cannot believe in illness and health at the same time. Neither can we accept ideas of lack and limitation along with concepts of prosperity. You just can't do it. The thought of negation must be released in order to heal the condition, whether it is a matter of health or finances or human relationships. You see. It's all done with our thinking. It's done with our mind. And it's changing that mind that this is not a universe of lack and limitation, of scarcity. This is a universe of sufficiency. This universe will always supply what you need. But you have to do your mental work. You have to start seeing the world the way you want to see it. And then the world mirrors that back to you. Remember, we are never seeing with our eyes. We are seeing with our mind. It's always the mind that's seeing everything. Because of the filters being the beliefs, the viewpoints, the attitudes, and the opinions that we hold is what we see through. So when you start to see abundance everywhere, you will start to live in abundance everywhere. And it's so easy, I think, to do that here in Los Angeles. I mean, you can see abundance everywhere. So learn to get on that side. Be with the abundance. Don't be with the lack of limitation. Don't be around people that have that lack and limitation attitude, who are always fearful of money. regardless of how much money they have. I know people with a great deal of money, and they are absolutely still afraid that they don't have enough, and that things aren't going to work out for them. And they're constantly talking about the lack of money. Who wants to be around that type of thing? You don't have to go around saying, oh, I have tons of money, and I'm very rich, and I'm this, that, and the other thing. That's ridiculous also. But you have to know that inside of you, you have to know that you are rich. You know, rich in thinking, that your thinking is rich. And when your thinking becomes rich, the outside world must also become rich. Learn to live in an opulent manner. Learn to see yourself as being opulent. And that will also change the way you feel about yourself and about this whole thing called life. This whole money struggle that people are having is not necessary. But it's absolutely not necessary. And we can change it. We just have to change our thinking about ourselves and our thinking about money. We allow the world out there to tell us what money is all about. And we must have that inside of us, you see. The other thing to remember is your net worth is not your self-worth. How many wealthy people do you know who have a large net worth, but they have no self-worth whatsoever, you see. So the idea of going through this life is not only to learn to love yourself, but to see things differently so that you're not doing these things to yourself. You see, this thing called God is not doing anything to you. It's not doing anything to you. You're doing it to yourself. Remember, God always holds you in the highest of esteem. And God always sees you through the eyes of love. You're not doing that for yourself. When we're not doing that for ourselves. And we all fall for that. I fall for it too. But I have to remind myself, I have to sit down and remind myself, what is this teaching? What do I actually believe? Or am I going to buy in to what the world is telling me out there? So with this situation with Aunt Catherine, I have to remember what I believe. And I have to make that belief work for me instead of falling or what the world is going to tell me, you see. We have to do our own thinking. We have to do it. All right, let's go to the next one. Start thinking health, harmony, plenty, and joy. Look at that. Start thinking health, harmony, plenty, and joy. Isn't that wonderful? So all day long, think of those things. I used to do one. I used to write affirmations for Creative Magazine, and one of them was good and plenty. Remember the candy? Mm-hmm. Good and plenty. And that's, remember that. Think of good and plenty candy. You know, good and plenty around here, and which is true. It's always good, and there's always plenty. See? All right? Let God do the rest. Now, here's the big one that we do. Too many people keep picking at their prayers, trying to tell God how something should come about, or wondering if he actually can accomplish the job. Now, Tom, remember, he's the one who made all these. They're in red in the original one, which is somewhere. And then he sent this to him. But you see, he got this. Trying to tell God how to do something. How something should come about, or wondering if he actually can accomplish his job, which is exactly what Tom was doing when he didn't get anything from New Orleans and he left. He was trying to tell God how it should come and what should be done. Oh, I'm not taking a third grade teacher's job. I'm the principal, you see. You have to let God do God's work, and that's what we don't want to do. We want to mess with God all the time, remember. Fun and Entertainment Committee, Ways and Means, Let God be the ways and means. God knows how to do that. And you'll free up your life a great deal when you realize, oh, I don't know how that's going to be done. But I don't have to know that, because I can rely on this thing called God to do that for me. And then God does those things for you, okay? Is there any lack of good in your life? Don't you believe it. Instead, accept God's gift of every good thing. Let his riches of health, abundance, harmony, freedom, and joy flow into your life now. So think about those things and let those things all day long think of what a wonderful world you live in. What a wonderful world you live in. And it is a wonderful world. Yes, we see all those little things going on out there. Remember, what you see on the news is only 5% of what's going on in the world. 95% of the good stuff that goes on, and it is 95%, we never hear of. We never hear of all the wonderful discoveries that are made till years later. There are wonderful miracles happening all day long, up and down, in and out, everywhere. But we only report all the mishaps that are going on, and we get attached to the mishaps. When you turn on the television set, all you see, first of all, right now, all I ever see when I turn on is competition, and I will not watch any reality games or anything anytime there's competition, because this teaching does not teach competition. It teaches creativity. When you have competition, you're saying somebody wins and somebody loses, and you're telling that person he is better than you are. No one is better than anybody else. And competition is not a healthy thing to have. Creativity is a very healthy thing to have, and then everyone wins. You see, in the mind of God, it's always a win-win situation. It's only in the ego mind that we have to separate from that and say, ah, I'm number one and you're number two, and I'm better than you are because I can do this and you da 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 da, whatever we're doing. So I never watch any of those reality shows, because I cannot stand somebody to say, you're off the show, or whatever they say to these people. No, don't want that. The other thing that you watch on television is all the murders and so forth that's going to go on. I mean, you can sit there and just go from station to station to station to station, and sometimes I can get it exactly right where somebody's dropping dead from a bullet on every station. On every station, different program, but everyone's dropping dead from a bullet. You look at that stuff long enough, you start to get a warped idea of what the world is all about. You start to think that everything is out there. And we hear that, don't we? Look, people are awful. People are mean and hateful. Look, they're always getting in trouble. They're doing this, they're doing that. That's not true. Not everyone is doing that, are they? Not everyone is doing that. But the people who do those different things, I can tell you right now, when I did different things that I didn't, that you wouldn't have approved of, why was that? Simply because I didn't know that I was worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and I mattered. If you know that you're deserving and worthy, totally lovable, and you matter, you don't go out and kill somebody. You don't steal. You don't do all these different things. But when you don't know that, and you don't know that you're attached to this thing that we call God, then you go out and you do these things because of the idea of separation. The idea of separation. And you hear that, well, that's just the way human beings are. It's not just the way human beings are. That's the way they see other human beings. And they just keep repeating that. Once we learn that we don't have to be that way, we can change it. But we live too much in what we call the ego mind. And that mind separates, and it's always going to have them and us. Them and us. And it's always going to be us. Everyone is included. We're all attached to each other. We're all attached to each other. The life that we're having is the life of God. one life. One life. Many expressions of that one life. Many expressions of that one life. But it's only one life. But we have been taught that that person is different. They're either different in color or sex or religion or whatever. So therefore, they're separate from us. They are not separate from us. And all the major religions who fight up one side and down the other and just absolutely boggle my mind. For years, I was boggled at the idea of, you know, that thing in Ireland where the Catholics and the Protestants are fighting, when there's only one God, and they will admit there's only one God, but they're fighting because their God is better than their God. Now, how can that be if there's only one? The Muslims are doing the same. It's done all over. But every religion says, regardless of what you call God, you can call God Harry, you know. God doesn't care. We just give it Allah and this and that, all these names. I don't know. God doesn't need a name. God doesn't need a name. But regardless of what the name is, what they profess is exactly the same thing. But then they go out and they kill people and they call separation and they do all that. Never has made sense to me. Never has made sense to me. The main thing that never made sense to me, we'll go back to Ireland there. Why doesn't the Pope just tell him to stop if he has all the power and if he's infallible? All he'd have to do is say, don't do that or you're going straight directly to hell. You think they would pick up a weapon? I doubt it. But he doesn't. He lets them all fight. Because they don't want to get involved with those things. They don't want to get involved with those things. But it's no way to be a religion. No way to be a religion. We are all here on this plane of action. On this planet. Passing through time and space. There is nowhere else to go, people. We have to learn to love each other. But we have to start with ourselves and learn to love ourselves. We have to do that. Okay? All right. With all that said, tonight's topic is called Stardust. And the reason why I'm calling it Stardust is this. We are made from the same stuff as the stars. Our bodies are made from the same stuff as the stars. And it actually is made from stardust. Because after the Big Bang, all the dust that was created came zooming through the universe, landed here on this thing, this rock called Earth. We contain that original stardust. We, our bodies, contain that. The elements that we are made up from came from that Big Bang all those many billions of years ago. And I think that's absolutely wonderful. The reason why I like to expand my consciousness and hopefully your consciousness into thinking bigger about yourself, you have to know that you're more than a human being. You have to know that you're connected to this thing called God, that you're connected to this thing called the universe, that you didn't just have parents here on Earth. Yes, they were your earthly parents, and yes, you came through those parents, but you have to realize that the universe and this thing we called God is the originator of all of that. And that you have that original stardust inside of you. And you have to start thinking of yourself as more than a human being. That does not mean that you don't honor your mother and your father. You always honor the flesh that you came from. But you have to know that you are more than the flesh that you came from. And what is coursing through you is actually the stardust from the first Big Bang that went on. Because nothing enters our universe, you're saying. Nothing has been added since then. So it had to come from there. So the elements that are inside of our body has to come from the stars. Remember, one of the master teachers, Jesus, said, I am in this world, but I am not of this world. That means many things, but one thing that it means, he knew that he had stardust in him, that he was on this plane of action, you see, but he wasn't of this plane of action. And we can go on to prove that in a different way with the elements. The elements that are in your body are hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, and carbon. But in the earth, it's made up of hydrogen, oxygen, ammonia, and silica. You see, they are the components of the earth. We have in us things that are not the components of the planet Earth. So therefore, we are in this world, but we are not of this world. And this is what we want to remember, because if we think that we are only human beings, and there is only this one lifetime, and there is only this one plane of action, we have limited ourselves. We have limited ourselves so much. Use your imagination to stretch your consciousness. That was a gift that you were given. The biggest tool in your toolbox is your imagination. We don't use our imagination because the world loves to take that imagination from you. It loves to take it from you. So it can run you, lead you around by the nose, telling you what to think, how to think, when to think, what to do, how to do it, what to take, and all that stuff. Instead of realizing, that's just the world, and I am not of this world. I am much bigger. I am much bigger than that. And then start to think of that big bang. What was that? An idea in consciousness, an idea in this consciousness that we call God consciousness. God wanted to express itself and expressed itself with that and created a wonderful universe and galaxy after galaxy, and lo and behold, created what we call human beings. You see? Human beings. A wonderful, wonderful thing. Okay. I also mentioned way back when the whole idea that we are intentional creation, that our creation was intentional. Yes, there is such a thing as evolution, and things move through evolution. But human beings were an intentional creation, because we had to be built in this fashion to be able to hold the power that is within us, that divinity that is within us. And many other things on earth tried to hold it and couldn't. There were things that appeared on earth that were very similar to animals, or to animals, to humans. The apes, this, the chromium man, and the, what's the one with the A? Another man.
Throw.
Pardon?
Throw.
Yes, that one. And scientists all these years have been looking for what they call the missing link, because they could not figure out how one day there was this and the next day there was that. So we're looking for a missing link. Well, they'll never find the missing link. What they have discovered is that the Neanderthal man lived at the same time as humans, as we know today. They can tell that because of the geological record that is left behind. They're both in the same strata. If they weren't, you know, if this didn't happen, occur differently, they would be in a different strata. You know what I'm talking about? The earth lays down, all that. So, there would have been here, and then there would have been the next step, the next step, the next step, and then humans. But no, humans are in the same strata when they look at the geological records of the earth. So, we had to be intentional. We had to be an intentional creation, you see. So, believe in evolution because you can see it. And they're always having that fight over evolution and divine, whatever, creation. Why they fight over that is absolutely beyond me, because the reason why they fight is, yes, we can do Darwin's evolution of the species. No one ever completely reads the rest of the book. In the rest of the book, he finally says there has to be a divinity behind all this, because there is no way that you can explain the human eye, how the human eye evolved. You cannot explain that. Not through evolution, you see. So evolution only works so long and so far. But we were intentional creations. So if you know that you were an intentional creation and that you were here on this plane of action holding this power or this divinity within inside of you, now you have to say, ah, then I have to be worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that I matter. If I didn't matter, why would this creator create me intentionally? God wouldn't do that. This is not a cruel God. This is not a cruel God that we're talking about. The cruel God that they're talking about is in the Old Testament. And we're not doing the Old Testament. We're doing a completely new and different way to look at these things. I have nothing against the Bible either. I think the Bible is a wonderful thing, but it has to be read correctly, and it has to be read metaphysically. When you read the Bible metaphysically, it makes absolute sense to you. The Bible was written on many levels of consciousness. Again, Jesus, one of the master teachers, said, in my Father's home, there are many mansions, meaning in consciousness. There are many stratas of consciousness to go. So when you pick up the Bible, you can read it literally if you wish. But you can keep moving up in consciousness. And as you move up in consciousness, the Bible reads completely differently. Completely differently. But the main thing to remember is that you were intentional. You were an intentional creation, that you contain stardust, and that stardust was from the Big Bang, and it is still going through the universe, and you are part of that, and it's wonderful, and so are you, and so am I, and there ends the lesson. Thank you.